This is episode 96 of Extraordinary Women Radio. Welcome to Extraordinary Women Radio. I am your host, Cami Gilner. Women are being called to lead with voice, vitality, and vigor. Each week, join me for wisdom-filled interviews with extraordinary women living out loud and making a difference in our world. Their stories will uplift, inspire, and spark your own purpose-driven journey. Hello, my extraordinary women friends. Today's guest on Extraordinary Women Radio is Michelle Ashby, a woman on a mission to get 1,000 women placed on corporate boards. Currently, there are only 2 women for every 10 board seats sitting on corporate boards across the U.S. and Canada. And Michelle is on a mission to change this, to bring that ratio into a 50-50 balance, and to do it in a much faster timeline than that of our current trajectory of change, which, as she shares with us in this interview, would take 70 years. I believe in her work. It is so important. We talk about her personal journey to public boards, working in 2 male-dominated fields, mining and finance. Michelle has served on 6 corporate boards over 18 years and is currently an independent director for McEwen Mining. She's also a subject matter expert on corporate boards, a keynote speaker, and an executive business consultant. She interviewed 200 women over 18 months and has found the gaps that can keep women from achieving board status. And this research became the foundation for her ACE board training for women, with the goal of training 1,000 women for corporate boards and the Corporate Directors International Board Certification Exam, which certifies candidates for corporate board service. Her program teaches women how to get on boards, how to behave in the boardroom. It teaches financial and legal acumen. It also teaches women how to build their board resume, which is very different than a traditional resume, translating your experiences into executive vernacular. Michelle also founded Danny's Foundation in memory of her daughter, Danny Stell, which contributed over $1 million for Ewing sarcoma cancer research over 15 years. She has also served as a board member and chair of the board of the Oncology Board at the Children's Hospital, Colorado. I'm so honored to feature Michelle today. Let's meet the very extraordinary Michelle Ashby. Well, welcome to Extraordinary Women Radio, Michelle.
Hi, Cami. Thank you so much for having me. It's really an honor to be on your program.
Oh, it's an honor to have you here. Congratulations for recently being named to the Colorado Women's Chamber of Commerce, 25 most powerful women in our state. What an honor.
I know. It's pretty special. And it's been really a whirlwind since that came out. Thank you.
Yeah, it was a really fun celebration that night to go watch so many women that I knew being awarded in that space. And it was just like, It's really exciting what's happening in Colorado right now.
Yeah, and just to say one thing about that, the recognition part for women who are accomplishing things, I think is something really important. And the way that that has built up is really powerful, not just for us, but for the community,
right,
to recognize that there are, you know, there are women out there who have been doing some really great things and accomplishing those. So I was, like you said, it's an honor, very humbling, and it's still really important.
It is really important. And it's pretty aligned to this mission that you're on, to help 1,000 women get on corporate boards, because it's recognizing what women are doing, the good, the impact that they're making, the difference that they are making in their companies and their organizations. All this, that kind of recognition starts to raise the bar and elevate how women are seen and heard and recognized in our community.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely.
So let's talk about this fabulous mission of yours of helping 1,000 women get on corporate boards. Tell us a little bit more about it and what sparked the idea.
Yeah. So, Cami, I was actually on my path to serving myself. So my male mentors, my background's in finance and mining, and my male mentors, I watched them climb the corporate ladder, get on 3 or 4 boards, retire out, play golf, And, you know, they're making $500,000 or more working part-time, and they have stock options, and they're set for life. And that's where I thought I was headed. I've been on corporate board since 2005, and at the same time running businesses and starting new things. I'm an entrepreneur at heart. And in 2016, when I started that path for myself to add more boards, because I was on one at the time and I added a second one, was the same time that we started hearing more media coverage and around we need more women on boards. And it was that awareness that came to me that I was like, well, maybe I need to do something to help somebody else. So I got involved with the Women's Chamber program at the time called Board Bound, became a mentor, got a mentee, wonderful woman named Kim Carver, just amazingly, you know, qualified and accomplished in her own background. And worked with her for a year, and we met monthly, and I built the curriculum for her, and it was really fun. And but I realized that even if the two of us get on three or four boards, we're not going to move the needle. So where's the needle right now? It's at about 18% of boards across the United States and Canada. 18 to 20% are women on boards. So for us to get to parity, which would be 50% or more, I did my research and found out it would take us 70 years. That's 70, wow. Not 17.
Wow.
At the pace that we're going. And then I looked up how many programs are out there just for women to help them get on board. I found two programs basically that were serious programs, Harvard and Kellogg. And those programs are a 5-day weekend, cost you about $15,000. And oh, by the way, when you fill out the application, you have to be a CEO or COO of a pretty major company. So that left out 99% of us. And I spent 18 months interviewing about 200 women. And I was like, why aren't you on a board? Like, what happened in your career? And, what were those obstacles? So I just recognized that we are not going to get there fast enough. There's big gaps that women have in order to get on board. And I know what those gaps are now through those interviews and my background research that I did. And I was like, wait a second, I could go take care of myself and get on three or four boards, or I can go help a whole bunch of people get ready to get on boards. And this huge need out there, I just couldn't resist. It was just like, this has to happen. At least we have to try. So that's when I decided we need an army of women to get ready for boards, and we're way behind, and we need to do it really fast and really intensely and get it out there. So that's when I started developing the program in the late part of 2017 and launched it in 2018.
Well, first of all, congratulations on this. And it's so exciting to have someone with your expertise really taking on this mission, because I agree with you. It needs to shift. It needs to change. And, you know, going for 70 years is not a viable option. It's that push, that change that needs to take place. As you started to do the research, so you start going out and talking to women who are great prospects for boards. What did you discover? What were those gaps? What were the stories you heard? Give us a little bit of insight into that.
So I didn't know what I was looking for when I was meeting with these women. I was just intrigued with this whole question of why aren't there more women on board? So I didn't really have an intention. I didn't know I was going to do this until late 2017.
Okay.
It was really about, like, if I were to meet you at that time, I'd be like, Cammy, why do you think there aren't more women on boards? And we'd have that conversation. And I would say, why aren't you on a board? And then I would ask you, what happened in your career? Tell me a little bit about your background. And then I would ask you, can you introduce me to another powerful woman who knows a lot about diversity? I was really looking for women who had expertise in diversity and the glass ceiling and what got in our way. Mm-hmm. And those were the women that I started out with. And then it spread from there. So I have 200 stories, and I mean, they are across the board. Mm. So let me just share one with you. There was one gal who ran a division within a major corporation. I can't say any names here. And she ran the company, the part of the company she ran within the major corporation under the umbrella was the largest revenue group within the company. So very, very important. She had about 250 people working under her. She made a lot of money, high six figures every year. Mm-hmm. Very, very successful, very well respected. Their number one client who brought the most money in, they had a client dinner. So she's with a couple colleagues from her company and the clients there. I don't know who else was there, but you know, partway through the dinner, the client reaches over and unzips her sweater, exposing her bra, and put his hand on her leg. And she jumped up and ran out of the restaurant.
Oh my gosh.
She went outside and she ran outside. She's standing outside. Her male colleague comes out from her own company and says to her, "Thanks for taking one for the team." And
wow.
She ended up going to, she went and ended up going to HR, and HR basically came back and said, "We're going to move you to another division to run another division."
Wow. Wow.
Yeah.
That's unbelievable. So,
and it's not the only one. I've met women who've had these kinds of things and who've signed, they've taken the money, the settlement, they've signed the NDAs so they won't talk about it. I've met women who fought it and who have won, but it cost them everything. I've met women who just have all kinds of stories. Not all of them are quite that, you know, significant in what had happened to them. But over and over and over, there were clear things that I picked up on. And I looked at my own background and went, wait a second. I was invited to boards. I didn't have to go beg somebody to put me on a board. They came to me. I had no idea they were even considering me or that I was a candidate. So how did that happen? And so that became part of my internal search in myself to find out, do I have something they don't have? And if I do, can I share it and would it be valuable?
And so what came from that question?
Yes and yes and yes. I have to say that I've been in male-dominated industries my entire career, mm-hmm. and I've been fortunate to have extremely positive male mentors. And, you know, when there's all these conversations around not being included, I don't understand, because inclusion, I was included. And I'm sure it's a combination of the people that I was around and the way that I approached it and a number of other factors, but I've just been extremely blessed in having or choosing, maybe I've chosen to be around people who are like that in an unconscious way.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that you found yourself in a corporate board by being invited into it. And where was what was different between the 200 women that you talked to and what you discovered was not happening for them? And what happened for you?
Gosh, there's so much that was different that, you know, that's why I developed the course, because I heard different things from different people. So nobody is really exactly alike. And so creating something that would help women to show up and to be invited on board is my goal. Great. And the way I do that is through working with each woman individually and mm-hmm. helping them to identify their board skills and experiences, their executive skills and experiences, and how do you articulate those. So I say there's an executive vernacular, and I didn't even know that I had it, but because of all the years of working with CEOs and presidents, I spoke their language basically from the beginning. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's part of it. If that's where part of the comfort zone comes, it's like if you go to France and you can speak French fluently, you're much more accepted than right. if you come in and you're bumbling and you're like, you know, and it's the same kind of thing. So that's a big part of this, is teaching people about the executive vernacular, the executive mindset, and how to communicate in that realm so that people can hear you.
Right, right. So were some of the stories that you were hearing from the women, were they getting lost in the shuffle of, you know, of the corporate environment because they weren't being seen, they weren't being heard because of the language they were using, because of, is it language? Is it more than that?
I think it's more than that. I think it's unconscious biases. The other thing is, keep in mind that I am not a corporate girl. Mm-hmm. I'm an entrepreneur, and they're two different kinds of people. And I think there are different challenges for women who are trying to come up in the corporate world than there are for people like me who are outsiders creating value for companies or for business leaders.
Right.
And that may have been one of the advantages that I had, because I didn't have that glass ceiling. I was out there, you know, creating my own thing and growing.
That's
or not, or
right.
failing, depending, you know,
right.
depending on what was going on.
Right.
So I like to differentiate those, because I think they're just different experiences. And I frankly don't think I would have survived in corporate America, because I'm a little bit too independent.
No, and don't you love that independent side of you, right?
Oh, yeah.
Right. Right. So they were seeing you from a consultant perspective, where you were coming in and working, and they saw the value that you could bring to the table. You know, tell us a little bit about what that journey was like for you, and just share, were there some difficult moments for you along that way to the success?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So I started out as a stockbroker, and I came into the brokerage industry in the 80s when equal opportunity was the thing. So it was that the last wave, if you can imagine, 30 years ago, or when, however long ago that was, 6 years ago, that was like the first wave of women coming into the workforce as professionals, other than teachers, nurses, and librarians, and secretaries. And so it's kind of very similar to what's going on now. The door was open because there was a lot of pressure from the EEOC to meet quotas. Mm-hmm. So these guys were like, we'll hire you, we'll hire you. They just wanted the gender. They didn't care whether I could do it or not. I was a horrible stockbroker. Stockbrokers really just are salespeople in the beginning. And that rookie year was really hard. But I took on these dead accounts that were all gold stocks that had gone up and then down. And I talked to these clients who'd lost money, and they were these gold bugs, and I was fascinated by their philosophy about why they invested in mining stocks. And they would ask me, like, what's going on with ABC Gold? And I'd be like, I don't know, but I'll call them and I'll find out. So I'd call the president of the company, and I'd talk to him and ask him and get all the questions answered and call the client back. And we'd have this big conversation. And I decided that was a great place for me to specialize. So I decided to become a specialist in gold mining stocks, and interviewed 200 companies, went on mine tours. I aligned myself with geologists. Yeah, this is my pattern. I do a lot of homework, and then bam, next thing you know, I'm starting a trade association for the gold mining industry to attract more investors to the companies in a group.
Oh,
and that was in 1989. And, the first thing I did was I put a retreat together in Aspen. I convinced a bunch of CEOs to go up there, and I hired a male facilitator because I feared that they would not listen to a woman and a stockbroker. I was an outsider and a woman on top of that.
Mm-hmm.
And so this guy got us through the whole thing and came out with the outcome I wanted them to come out with, to form a group so that they can market themselves to the investors and attract more capital. And they basically patted me on the head and said, thanks a lot, little girl. Great idea. We'll take it from here.
Oh, wow.
So that was my first kind of, this is not going to be you. You had the great idea, but we'll take it. And at the same time, I had these men there were like four or five of them who kept going, Michelle, you have to do it because you're the outsider. They're going to fail. Sure, they're going to try it, but it's not going to work. And we want you to keep going. And so they encouraged me to keep going. So it was a slog. I was a single mom, divorced, two babies, two kids. I was a stockbroker working on 100% commission. So that means you start at zero every single month. And now I'm launching this trade association. I have no idea what the heck I'm doing. And the first conference I put together in 1989, there were 625 people that came.
Oh, wow.
And I did it all by myself. It was crazy.
Okay. That's awesome.
Yeah. But I think, you know, when you do something like that, guess who notices?
Right.
These guys were like, what the heck did she just pull off? Like the value that they got out of that was monumental. And so those that got it were behind me and they supported me through it. And as the organization grew and became more successful, they did a bunch of weird stuff. So the board, at one point, like 6 years into it, they hired one of their male cronies to be the executive director and take my role. And they were going to pay him twice as much as they were paying me.
Oh,
so
wow.
I was devastated. And I had a couple of mentors and I called them. One was Susan Kirk. So I did have the woman who helped me. She used to be a staff person for Senator Tim Worth. And, okay. You know, and the other was one of my board members, the attorney on the board. And they told me, they said, you know, you got to keep in there because you can't let them take this from you. You've worked too hard for it. And you deserve it. And Susan referred me to a friend of hers who was the former attorney general of the state of Colorado. She was the first woman. And I can't remember her name now. And I went and met with her. And I remember I was so scared, you know, so intimidated. And she looked at me and she goes, I'm going to write a letter. It's going to be a one-page letter. I'm going to send it to your board of directors. And I'm not charging you. And I just want you to know that this is going to scare the hell out of them when they get this. So you're going to be fine. And she sent that letter out and OMG, that board was like, wham, bam. I ended up getting the salary that they were going to give this other guy. He got no salary. I got the money, but not the title. He got my title. So okay. A few years later, I got the board together again, hired a facilitator to come in and do a strategy. And I told the facilitator, I want you to get it so that they make me CEO.
Mm-hmm.
And he did. So I took the title of CEO and my male counterpart was the executive director, you know, forever and ever. And I was there for 18 years and they would pull this kind of stuff every once in a while. But I prevailed. And I think because I had the wherewithal to ask for support, I had really good people to help me. And I was brave enough to stand up for myself, I did okay.
Right. And there was savviness associated with that as well. Being able to see what was happening, step back and say, okay, I need some support around me. How do I maneuver this and step forward?
Yeah.
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 Well, that's an incredible story. And as you start to think about how that then played into you being asked onto boards, how did that happen?
Well, the trade association that I put together, the Denver Gold Group, became known in the world as the best. We had the best conference in the U.S. and in Europe. And it was very exclusive. So we only allowed the producing gold companies that are publicly traded and their largest institutional investors from around the world. So you can imagine that there were a lot of people who wanted access to the CEOs of these particular two entities, the money and the CEOs. And it was my job to keep them out. And so I gained a very high level reputation as being the one who facilitated that. And they appreciated it.
Right.
And a lot of deals got done and a lot of people made a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
I also was very supportive and very interested in the industry, what their challenges were. I constantly was bringing in outstanding speakers, topics, forcing issues with them as a group, you know, allowing innovation, certain people to come in and talk about things that the rest of the companies may poo-poo or think was a little bit out of the, you know, too edgy, whatever the case may be. And those made me stand out, and right. they trusted me. It right. built a trust in the fact that they saw me as one of them and somebody who really cared about what was happening to them and to their companies and to the people that worked for them and to their minds. And I genuinely was enthusiastic about who they are and what they were doing. And that was my payback.
Right. Right. And a couple of things I see that you did really well through that was that, one, you built a very niched market space. You were in the mining space, right? You knew that space. You knew the top people in that space, and you became known as somebody in that community as a leader in that community, that it was working with the very top people in those organizations. So really, I would say that's really important when you're thinking about, you know, finding the corporate board. You have to have those connections and those relationships.
Yes. And visibility.
Yes.
I had a lot of visibility. Everyone knew my name. If you were in the gold mining industry and you either knew the Denver Gold Group or you knew me or you knew both.
Right.
I spent most of my career after we hit our stride, I spent most of my time telling people, no, you can't come in.
Right.
And that raised my profile a lot.
Interesting. So you kept that very elite group of people coming to the table.
Yes.
Yeah. So now what you have your program today, what are you teaching women in this program?
So we cover the kind of standard stuff, the board governance, the financial acumen, how to get on boards, how to behave in the boardroom. We also have experts that come in and do like the audit, you know, the auditors come in and talk to the cohort about audit committee and financial red flags on financial statements. I have a legal team that come in and talk about risks and responsibilities for directors. And then I have an expert who comes in and talks about blockchain in the boardroom. Mm-hmm. And beyond that, we do a lot of self-discovery. There is a lot around building your board resume. So that's a foundational piece. A board resume is very different than a professional resume. And what we talk about is your value proposition. What skills and expertise do you have in your background that's at the executive level? And how do we transfer that into that executive vernacular that I was talking about earlier.
Right.
So that when people are reading it, because who's going to read your resume, do you think? Do you think it's going to be a woman?
No. Nope.
No. So it has to speak to the male brain. So I help translate it into a way that the male brain can, it very naturally accepts the information that's going in. So it eliminates that first hurdle.
Okay. And you're also helping them start to network and build their connections, their communities, and start to help them find channels, correct?
Right. So they come out with a plan. They come out with their plan of how they're going to get on a board. What companies are they targeting, or what types of companies are they going to target? Who are their networks? Who are their champions? For women who are introverts and maybe don't have a lot of networking or don't like to do that, you know, sometimes I'll pair them with other people. I invite some of my cohort to go to different functions. I let them know, like, I'm going to be at this event. You know, would you like to come with me? And I will introduce you around, you know, to kind of help them get going. Oh, we also practice elevator pitches, and it's a great place to, you know, to stumble and fall and do all those kinds of things in a very safe environment. I create a very safe, secure, confidential environment where we can all like let our hair down and really get down to the nitty gritty and then build ourselves back up. So it's like boot camp, right? You strip away all the crap and then you build yourself up in this incredibly powerful way.
That's awesome. That's awesome. So I've been serving on nonprofit boards for nearly a decade now. What's it like being on a corporate board, and how does it vary from being on a nonprofit or a foundational board to be on a corporate board?
Well, your level of responsibility is much different because as a director, first and foremost, you have, you know, your duty of care. And so as a director, independent director, I'm representing the company and I'm also representing the shareholders. So I'm sitting in a role that's really quite complex because I want the best for the company and for the employees and for the outcomes. And at the same time, I want to help with shareholder value, make sure that we're paying attention to what the shareholders are expecting. What's the share price? Why is it where it's at? If it's not as high as we think it should be, et cetera, et cetera. So there's a huge difference between sitting in an advisory board role in a private company that's a corporation or a public board, and you're highly regulated, sometimes in both, but primarily in the public side because you're under the Securities and Exchange Commission regulations or in Canada, you know, the Ontario Securities Commission. So there's a lot more there. So typically, like a great way to talk about it is when you're in the boardroom, typically we have an attorney and our CFO that sit through the entire board meeting with us, except for when we need them to leave because they're management and we have conversations without them in the room. Our attorney's there to make sure that we're following our agenda. Right. You know, what goes in our minutes is very important. What doesn't go in our minutes is very important. So there's a lot.
There's a lot more regulation that needs to come about with it. There's also from the perspective of corporate boards are paid.
You got that right. So it can be anything from maybe I'm in a startup and I'm going to get stock options. Mm-hmm. And someday those may turn into a big cash in. Mm-hmm. And also I could be paid director fees. I could be paid a salary or a fee that's on an annual basis. And then I get stock options on top of that. That's pretty typical. That's pretty much how I've been compensated throughout my board career. And that's pretty much how it works. I mean, there are variations of those two things. But if you're on a committee, so let's say you chair a committee, you usually get more.
Okay.
Then you get like your salary and then you get an additional.
What sort of dollar ranges are we talking about here? And I understand they're going to vary by company size and that sort of thing, but give us just some ideas.
Yeah, they do range by company. So, the smaller companies, you're talking maybe $20,000 to $40,000 a year plus stock. Mm-hmm. As you go up, obviously it gets higher. I think commonly in the big companies, like the Fortune 500, I think the average is about $235,000 a year plus stock.
Okay, nice. So what advice would you give to our listeners who are thinking, gosh, I'd love to be on a corporate board. How do I do that?
Well, I think the first thing is to start to do your homework and find out, like, you know, how do I do that? And I would really, really stress that you need to be prepared because you're only going to get one shot. If you go out there and you really don't know what you're doing and you're just whamby-pamby telling people, you know, get me on your board, it's going to make a bad impression and they will not recommend you for anything that comes up. So I think it's something to be very specific about and to recognize what you don't know. So that was like one of my biggest aha moments in interviewing all these women is they don't know what they don't know. And, going up and saying, hey, I'd love to be on a board. What do you pay? That's not a good way to approach it.
Exactly.
But I've heard people do that, you know, and I'm like, oh my gosh, you gotta, there's a different way to do this. So that's why I'm doing what I am doing is to help women to have the best chance possible to get on the right board. And it has to be a fit on both sides, by the way.
Right.
It can't just be, you're offered one and you just take it. You got to be picky too.
Right. And how does somebody know if they are board material?
That's a good question. My criteria is I want women who are either in leadership roles or who want to be in leadership roles. Unlike Harvard and Kellogg, I'm not looking at the fact that you've already made it in a CEO role. Mm-hmm. And I've trained women from their 30s to their 70s because these women in all those age groups need it. They have what it takes, the chutzpah, the leadership, they have passion. They want to sit in a role and make decisions at the very top. You know, I say it's because I'm bossy that I like being in the boardroom, but it's really serious and it's not easy. You're sitting there, like I said, you're in this role of responsibility for a lot of people. So you have to have a lot of chutzpah to do that. And if you're in your 30s and you don't have the experience yet, but you have conviction and you are really heading into that leadership, you are a candidate to me, because with what you're going to learn, the trajectory of your career will be driven by you, not by circumstances that come your way or by what's offered to you.
Right.
You get in control of where you want to go. And if a board seat is somewhere in your future and that's on your list, you're going to behave differently and you're going to be invited, just like I was.
Right.
Because you will stand out and you will know what the vernacular is and you will be recognized as someone that would be a great candidate.
Nice. Nice. That's awesome. So where can people learn more about your courses and your work, Michelle?
So the website has a lot of information about what the course is about, and that's acellc.consulting.
So ACE, right?
ACE, right.
Yeah.
LLC, like limited liability corporation .consulting.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a submission page right there. You can email me and I will send you a board assessment quiz. I do info sessions from time to time that I can invite people to. So we can sit down and talk about this. But I start out with this board assessment quiz. It's 13 questions, very quick. And I can send you that link and you can zip right through that and get your initial feedback on where you are and what kind of interest you might have in doing this at some point in your career.
And right now you're building a class in Colorado and another in, what's the other city?
So I have three courses year, one in Vancouver.
Okay.
And Denver and Toronto. And what I tell people is don't worry about the jurisdiction, because if you end up going to Canada to take this, the exposure there will be very beneficial. There are a lot of Canadian companies who are looking for board members as well. And I do get requests for women who are from the U.S.
Okay.
My boards are all Canadian and U.S. myself, so I'm very comfortable there and have a ton of contacts. So that's been working quite well. Of 32 graduates, we have 6 women on 7 boards already. And there's a whole bunch of them that are in their interviews right now.
Wow.
So I'm expecting
awesome. That's even grown since we spoke. So that's congratulations.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I'm expecting to announce maybe another 6 or so, in the very near future. Cause this is like, you know, this is the season where they're really putting people on board. It's an 8-week program and we do a retreat for 4 days, then there's home study. Then we reconvene at the end for a full day workshop. So it's a pretty condensed course. So even though you're busy, it's easy to get in and out and do that and get certified. There's a certification exam you can take and walk away with a designation from Corporate Directors International as a certified board candidate. And then you go into a profile catalog that I created, and that catalog is circulated to the connectors and influencers who are looking for board candidates. And it's been very successful just utilizing those tools to help women get exposure.
That's awesome. That's totally awesome. Well, I am so excited about what you are doing for women in our world. I think it's important for the companies that are going to be benefiting from board of directors, members that have gone through your programs. And so thank you for all you're doing. Tell us, the final question I always close with are, what three pearls of wisdom can you share with our audience today?
Yeah, I saw that. So I have them. They're pretty quick.
Okay.
The first one is stand out. And so that means you gotta, whatever that means, it could be the way you dress. I wear colors all the time. I usually go into meetings or conferences and they're all men and it's a sea of black suits and I'll be wearing something in peach or yellow or, you know, bright blue or something like that. Stand out by how you work, what you do for people. And you know, so that they recognize the value that you're bringing, kind of like the story I told about Denver Gold Group. Mm-hmm. The second one is stand up. Stand up means raise your hand and say, I'm going to do this, even if that little voice inside is saying, uh-oh, I'm scared, I don't have what it takes, blah, 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 blah. Stand up and stand for yourself. You know, I know that this is hard in these corporate situations, these stories that I've heard. I admire these women who have the courage to stand up for themselves, and they go through hell. But they feel really good about who they are in the end. Like they did the right thing, you know? Mm-hmm. And so, standing up sounds easy, but it can be challenging.
It can be really difficult. Yes. Yes.
Yeah. But you'll love who you are on the other end of it. The third one is something that, my daughter gave to me. One thing we didn't talk about is, you know, one of the significant change things that affected my life was I had two children, and my daughter was diagnosed with cancer when she was 18 mm-hmm. and died when she was 19. So mm-hmm. that was like the biggest thing in my life, but she lived her life so fully. Like she lived more than most people do in 40 years. So she was my wild child, very challenging. I loved her. She was just great. Anyway, what she gave to me as a gift was a song by Bob Marley. And I play it every time I kind of get a little scared or, you know, like when those moments are there.
Yes.
Right.
So yes.
I think it's called Three Little Birds. But the line that really stands out for me is when he says, every little thing is going to be okay.
Yes.
Or be all right. Mm-hmm. That has gotten me through a lot of crap, of head trash. So right. Just remember that everything's going to be okay. Mm. That's my third one.
I love that. Well, this has been awesome, Michelle. Thank you so much for sharing all your wisdom on this topic that I think is so important in our world. And thanks for joining us today.
Thank you. I'm so excited. This is like my first ever podcast interview. I feel like I'm a virgin podcaster.
Well, there you go. You were awesome. You were totally awesome. And it's a great way for you to be spreading the word. So I'll spread your name around for some of my other female podcasters that are doing
really
amazing audiences. So
I know. I love it. I'm so excited. Thank you so much for having me.
You bet. You bet. And good luck in your program. And maybe one of these days I'll actually jump in on your program as well. I think that would be amazing. So
I would love to have you.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, thank you,
Michelle.
Let's
talk about that.
Okay. Let's do it. Okay.
Thanks, Cammie. All right.
Bye.
Bye.
I hope you liked this episode of Extraordinary Women Radio. If you did, please share this podcast with your own special tribe of women and help spread the love, the dreams, and the inspiration. Are you ready to raise up your voice, your visibility, and your business? I invite you to visit me at CammieGellner.com to find out how you can make heartfelt connections to mindful strategies to ignite an abundant flow of cash and clients into your business. I'd love to hear from you on any of my social media channels. I'm on both Facebook and Twitter. Till next time, my friend, listen to your heart, follow your dreams, and be you.